Okay, so Osmore FDS, or the RF delay simulator, because that's the best name I could come up with. So wait, how do I? Oh wait, it's not exactly. Okay, that's better. So when the what the name says pretty much what it does, right? It simulates an RF delay, which means you have an RF port which takes an input signal and it transmits that same input signal on the output port some time later, hopefully a deterministic time later. At the moment, it's just a simple delay, but it could be, you know, extended to actually simulate multipath or things like that as the need arises for it. So why did I do that? Well, the goal was to, you know, integrate with the GSM tester at Sysmocom, which has a, you know, different hardware connected and stuff like that to test it. And mainly this particular piece would be to, you know, experiment with the timing advance at the lowest layer possible, so that you test the entire stack. Because, you know, with virtual PHY and stuff like that, you can simulate the timing advance at different layers of the protocol and things like that, but here it's to really have it on the exactly the real device, you know. You just, and so yeah, and Harald was looking for a solution for that for Sysmocom, and the Pluto was seemed like a good solution. Other options that were considered were RF over fiber with, you know, long spools of fibers or long RF cables, stuff like that. So this is a little more software defined. So the target device is the Adam Pluto, which is, you know, basically a Zinc connected to an ADI 9361. Why this device? Well, mostly we have plenty of them around, and we need to find something useful to use them for, right? So That seemed like a good match. The build system to generate custom images and custom applications from ADI actually works astonishingly well. Like, if you follow the instruction, you will get a working image out of the box. It works. What's a bit annoying about those images loaded on there is that there is no provision for any kind of persistence, which means that every time you plug it and unplug it and it reboots, everything will be lost. There is no overlay for persistence or anything like that, at least that I could find. Which is a bit annoying, because the FPGA image is actually needed on boot, and which means that every time you want to change the FPGA image, you actually need to rebuild and reflash and completely a new image. The Zinc itself allows changing the FPGA configuration on the fly, but something somewhere in the ADI's logic doesn't like that, and the Linux side will work fine, but you won't be able to talk to any of the SDR part, which, you know, kind of defeats the point in this application. Other minor issue is that by default they use RNDIS for the, so on the when you plug that on your laptop, you get a CDC console, basically. You also get a network device, and they use RNDIS. I patched the image to use ECM, which is more standard, and mostly because I didn't have the driver for RNDIS and I didn't want to build them. I had the ECM one. Same thing, SSH keys, because again, everything is lost at reboot. If you want to add your own SSH key, you actually have to rebuild an entire image with that. Which makes me think that it's very possible that the pre-built image that's distributed on the website actually comes with my SSH key, as allowed to log in as root on the device, you know. Just beware of that. So IIO. So IIO is the, you know, framework for that's been made by ADI to interface with various things. It wasn't especially designed with SDR in mind. It was, you know, all industrial sensors and that kind of stuff. And it's been kind of forced into being used for SDR in this application. And so when you log in on the Linux running on the Zinc, you get an IO device, and that's how you're supposed to talk to the SDR parts. I tried to implement the loopback and everything using purely IIO, because IIO gives you those buffer objects, and so the hope was that you'd be able to, you know, get a buffer from the RX and then feed it to the TX, so that the Zinc wouldn't have any actual work to do except shuffling buffer around. There's a variety of ways for which that didn't work. The first thing is that the IO buffer is really just, it's an opaque wrapper. You have no idea what's inside, and it doesn't actually, there is no mapping between, there's no constant mapping between a IO buffer object and the physical buffer. They will switch the physical buffer inside the same IO buffer, and so you can't just give them and consider them as mapping to a constant area in memory. The other problem is that that opaque wrapper is actually tied to a specific IO channel, so you can't use an IO buffer that you got for RX and send it to TX. That just doesn't work that way. And I tried meddling around in the inside of IO, but couldn't get anything to work. And that wouldn't have done any good for the two reasons that follow, is that IO has no timestamp whatsoever. So you can't tell him to transmit a buffer at a defined time, or you can't get the time at which you received an RX buffer. You also have absolutely no way to start RX and TX pass at the same time, because there is no timed command or anything like that, which means depending on when the Linux would issue the actual writes to the memory mapped IO to start and stop the DMA's engine, the loopback delay of that RF delay simulator was basically random on boot. It would be more or less constant, but random, and you couldn't choose it, which is, you know, really not good. It would be a multiple of the buffer size, but that doesn't help you that much, right? The other problem is there is no feedback on over and underflow, which means if for any reason or anything you miss a buffer or anything, well, that random delay would actually vary over time, which is really not good at all. So I kind of dropped the idea of using IO for that. Other fun things in IO is the naming of the, you know, you have IO devices, and inside those devices you have channels, and the mapping of what does what is really not that obvious. I mean, if you see, you know, CF89361 LPC, that's the receive path. You know, there is Eric's absolutely nowhere in that name. And then CF89361-DDS-Core-LPC, that's the transmit path. And why? Somewhere buried in the documentation, you can find what does what. But when you first go into it, it's really not obvious. I actually documented what does what. If you look in the source code of the control application, I actually documented what names maps to what, in case you're confused. And of course, I still need to use IO because I need to actually start up the device, stuff like that. And I don't want to reinvent the wheel, and so I just reuse IO. But it just sets up the frequency again and configure my custom logic. So the custom logic, well, since I can't do it in IO, I decide to do it directly in the FPGA, right? Because it's really the right way to do it anyway. Again, the FPGA code from EDI is actually pretty good. It might be a little too generic for my taste. You can see it's an example code that they distribute so that people can take it and integrate it in their own application. But that means that the Verilog code is actually supports the chip being interfaced using LVDS or using CMOS or all those options, which are actually not used on the Pluto because, well, it's depends on your PCB layout, and obviously you can't change it dynamically. So there's a bit too much options, so sometimes it can be hard to understand or see exactly what's used and what's not, but it's fairly well structured and it didn't take too much time to see what does what, and that part is actually fairly well documented. The modification is like super simple. Basically, I just tap into the RX path. You have a block that handles all the physical interface, you know, like the CMOS I/O, the sampling of the DDR edge, and all that kind of stuff. And that feeds that to a packetizer and things that sends it over to the Zinc. I just tap the data at that point, feed it to a variable delay line, which is really just a circular buffer where the read pointer and the write pointer are at a fixed configurable offset from one another, and that offset is configured by the Zinc, and that fixes your delay basically. And I directly inject it into the transmit path. So the transmit path, it can act as the normal, usual way it would normally works. You can still use your Pluto as a normal Pluto with no issue. But if you toggle the write bit in the write config register, instead of just transmitting what the DMA sends, it will actually take the signal it received, multiply it by a constant, so you can vary its amplitude, and add it to the signal that you asked to transmit, and send it off. I did an addition, because that way, if in addition to the loopback, you want to add, say, Gaussian noise to test the SNR response, stuff like that, you can actually do it. And IO actually has a nice feature, I guess, that you can just give it one or a set of buffers and tell them to play in a loop. And so you just set that up at the beginning, and it will just auto-repeat, basically. So yeah, that's a very simple FPGA modification, and that could easily be extended. I mean, at the moment, it's really just an addition, but if you put an FIR with complex taps, you could have a channel one step closer to a channel simulator. And if you add multiple of those in parallel, you can have multipath with different length with fairly easy modification. You can just Xilinx has free FIR compilers and stuff like that. So yeah, if anybody needs that, it's not too hard to do. The control software, well, it really doesn't do much. It just really just sets the frequency gains and that kind of stuff. It does continuous RX, but it does nothing with the data, just drops it. It transmits zero. Actually, turns out it's not even needed. I mean, you don't have, once you've started the RX, it will actually continue, and if you start the ticks, it will underflow or overflow if you don't actually shuffle the buffer, but the FPGA logic will continue to work, including the loopback, which means that if you actually kill that application, the loopback actually continues. it doesn't shut down on its own, which I consider it a feature, but maybe you could see it as a bug. It depends on the way you see things, whatever. And yeah, there's not that many options. Something else that was developed, and that's kind of interesting, and it was developed at the same time, but it's kind of unrelated to RFDS itself, but it's just in the same repo, is the UHD pinger. Because I needed to test I needed a way to actually test it, right? I planned to use my signal generator and the E4406, and that's when I realized that my E4433 is broken at the moment, and I haven't taken the time to fix it yet. So I developed that instead. And basically, it measures the latency using an UHD device. So it just sends periodically a burst of BPSK modulated data out of the TX port. And using timestamp, it does a synchronized RX. And then it tries to find, OK, how many samples after I ordered the transmit do I get the pulse back? And so using the transmit and receive on different frequency, I was able to test the Osmo RFDS. I got the echo at the right time, and that if I told the delay simulator to simulate a 100 microsecond delay, I actually got the data 100 microsecond later than I tell him that if I tell it to simulate a zero sample delay, for instance. But it can also be used to test the intrinsic latency of a UHD device. If you look in the Osmo TRX, there's a bunch of magic values in there that represent the kind of the latency of the FPGA image of the B200, because it has digital signal processing blocks, CIC, half band filters, CICs. What is it? CICs, I think. Yeah, whatever. I meant the codec. And all those magic values, they change depending on the sample rate, on the master clock rate that you configure, and that kind of stuff. But in Osmo TRX, they're important because you need to know when RX and TX are aligned, and so you could actually use that to measure those values and check that they actually make sense. Currently, I mean, it was done really quickly because it was just a tool to test Osmo RFDS. Improvements would be FFT-based correlation. At the moment, I just do a naive correlation of just summing and adding at different offsets, but that takes time. If you use an FFT, you can go much faster. Also, currently, I just generate a random bitstream from udevrandom, I think, and BPSK modulated, which works fine. But if you wanted a sharper peak in the correlation, you could use codes that have good known autocorrelation properties, you know, like gold codes out of two, that kind of, you know, things that are used for training sequences. So that's an example of running the pinger, and you see you just configure here at a given frequency, and eventually you get an echo, and it tells you how many samples afterwards it was received. The other values are just the amplitude, I think. Yeah, the amplitude and the threshold. It can also detect multiple peaks if there are several peaks that are strong enough. So a couple of resources. Well, you have the project, which has the actual documentation of how to run it, how to build it, and also some pre-built image that you can just flash. Yeah.
I have a newbie question on the previous slide.
Yeah.
Why is the transmit frequency different than the ERX one?
Oh yeah, because I was testing over the air. Oh yeah, so the question is, why is the transmit frequency different from the RX one? It's because this particular test I was testing over the air, not with cables, and so I can't test. I mean, that there would have been a conflict if I tell the Osmo RFDS to receive and transmit with a delayed version. It would create a loop, right? I mean, with cables, you can transmit and receive on the same frequency. The crosstalk is small enough. But when you're over the air, it would kind of create a sort of, I don't know, like a Larson effect in RF or something. You see, or... Because, I mean, if you tell Osmo RFDS to transmit the signal 1 microsecond later back, and you're over the air, it will... When it transmits it 1 microsecond later, it will again re-receive it and then re-retransmit it 1 microsecond later, and so that creates a loop that, exactly. An echo, produce echo, except RFDS actually amplifies the signal as well, so it just ends up saturating itself, basically. the project page with a pre-built image, how to build it and how to run it. The actual code, if you want to, you know, rebuild it yourself, and this is the link to the documentation to the Pluto itself. It's the wiki from Analog, which has some decent information about the Pluto and how to build the image and that kind of stuff. And thank you to Sysmocom to sponsor the work on that project. And to Analog Device for actually providing us with the Plutos. And that's it. If anybody has any questions.
Regarding the Pluto and the loop, is there some space left in the FPGA for example, for doing some complex multiplication and modulation of the signal to generate?
Yes, there's plenty of space left in the FPGA for doing a lot of things. I mean, I think there is like maybe like 5% of the complex blocks, the DSP blocks used, and also very few block RAMs. There's a significant part of the logic elements used in the FPGA, but the block RAMs and the DSP blocks, there's plenty of them to go around. So yeah, if you want to do complex multiplication or an FIR filter with complex tabs and that kind of stuff, plenty of space for that. Yeah, well, I'll just repeat it. Just say it and I will repeat it in the microphone.
Regarding the UHD pinger, I'm doing exactly the same thing for our mobile station implementation on SDR. And is it available somewhere in these repositories?
Yeah, so the question is about the UHD pinger, because in the MS implementation by Piotr, there is something similar. And yes, the UHD pinger is also, it's in the Osmo RFDS repository in the tools directory or something. So it's there, in that repo. Yeah.
Very quick. So, how much much delay can you simulate given the memory that you have available in the FPGA? Do you have an idea? Well, of course, it depends on the sample rate.
Yes. So the question is how much delay can be simulated. I honestly can't remember. But it was very significant. It was more than a multiples time more than a GSM frame. I remember that. And I didn't use all the block RAMs that I could have used. I left a ton of them free. So yeah, it's definitely significant. As you say, it depends on the sample rate. But I was working on like a 1 or 2 mega samples per second because it was for GSM, and that's way enough. But yeah, as I said, the default design of the ADI doesn't actually use a significant amount of block RAMs. For some reason my browser doesn't display, but whatever. So most of the block, it's a Zynq 7010, and yeah, I'm pretty sure like 90% of the block RAM are free. So you know, look up the specs and do the math for.
And I mean, the Pluto SDR typically is limited to that rather narrow or low sample rates because there's the USB. But since all of this happens inside the FPGA, of course, you can in theory at least use the full sample rate of the RF front end, right? So I'm just thinking whether, for example, this could also be used with a 10 megahertz LTE channel to simulate the timing advance there.
Yes. So the question is about the sample rate, yes, because as you say, everything happens in the FPGA. You're not limited either by the bandwidth of the USB or even by the processing power of the Zynq or anything like that. So yeah, you can. I think you can run it up to 30.72 mega samples per second in the way they're wired in the Pluto, basically. The maximum sample rate of the chip is 60 or something, but depending on how they wired the FPGA interface to the ADI to the FPGA, the interface can only run at a given clock frequency, and you need to have transmit and receive enabled, of course. And so I think the limit is 30.72. But yeah, I mean, to simulate LTE at a 10 megahertz bandwidth would be no issue. Of course, you get, you know, less delay because you have more samples, but it should be more than enough to.
So, what about oscillating the delay? Can you make it go like this?
I mean, you can dynamically configure the delay, but obviously, at the point where you change it, you have a discontinuity, right? It's not going to do like fractional interpolation or progressively change the delay. You can progressively change it one sample at a time, I guess. But you will have a small non-linearity at the time where you change it. I guess if you oversample enough, it shouldn't distort the signal too much if you change it progressively enough, basically. But the core definitely supports changing the delay on the fly while everything is running. No, not at the moment. It would be fairly easy to simulate multipath because you can just instantiate a second block and a second adder, and have both configurable, for instance. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. You could add a as I said. Oh yeah, I made a mistake. It should say codec here and not CIC because CIC wouldn't help to add a frequency error. But yeah, you could add a complex multiplier with a codec to simulate a frequency error and simulate Doppler. Yeah, there's a bunch of, as I said, because most of the DSP blocks are free and the block RAMs are free too. There's lots of room for extension if anybody wants to do that or needs it. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.